Boy, Elise, I hope the sound was there for that intro because I didn't hear it. I hope it was there for the audience. Welcome, everybody, to your Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power recap here on YouTube.com/kindoffunny. It's another two-person crew, just two little hobbits is making their way through this really scary and perilous world. I'm Andy Cortez, and I'm joined by Elise Willems.
I'm Elise Willems, and I just realized that I am wearing green, so I'm getting keyed out.
Okay, my delirious brain was like, man, you look exactly like our set. Like, that's exactly.
Hang on, let me see if I can completely finish this.
This is incredible. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, audio listeners, you're going to want to
Missing out. You're missing out on some true special effects right here. That's where all the budget went right there.
I can change, or we can just.
No, it's awesome. It's hilarious. I thought, like, wow, you're wearing the same colors as the show. How perfect. That's amazing. welcome, everybody, to your Rings of Power screencast. This is a kind of funny screencast. It's our weekly show. We break down the latest in TV, movies, and trailers. You can watch it on YouTube.com/kindoffunny, Rooster Teeth, or on your favorite podcast service by searching for the kind of funny screencast. If you want to get the show ad-free, you got to go to Patreon.com/kindoffunny. Just like our Patreon producers, Fargo Brady and Molecule. Thank you so much for supporting. Housekeeping, we got a bunch of other shows we're still talking about. She-Hulk, Rings of Power, House of the Dragon, that hot D, and brand new added to the lineup, Andor, which I heard is actually pretty good, and that excites me because I've been pretty gone from a lot of recent Star Wars shows. They just haven't been doing it for me, but I've heard this is the one, and I've heard a lot of people who are also as jaded as I am saying, this is the one. So that excites me.
Likewise, Elise,
do you have any excitement for Andor?
It might pull me back in.
Really?
This week I didn't have a ton of time to consume television, and Lord of the Rings was my priority, but Andor might be the one that gets me back in. And I thought it was going to be Obi-Wan. And I still don't know why he was cubing meat, why he was making meat into bricks, but I guess I'll
it's
never know.
It's a different culture, you know?
Yeah.
You got to live there to fully understand it. I thought Obi-Wan was going to be it for me as well, even though I think there was a lot of awesome moments amongst the series that I just super didn't fully care for like I would have hoped for. But Andor apparently is really awesome. And that's a great crew on that screencast. That's a bunch of Star Wars geeks over there that'll give you the full rundown on those episodes. Today we are brought to you by MeUndies and Shopify, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, we got a week to catch up here on Elise because we missed last week. I was in Austin for a wedding. So shout out to all y'all who tweeted at me asking for the episode.
And
totally fine.
And I know that there was some controversy, belt or no belt. You didn't bring it. I thought you looked fantastic, Andy.
Thank you, Elise. Thank you. Yeah, I didn't bring a belt. I thought when you click the accessories button, maybe a belt would come in there. And that's on me because I have a belt. I just decided not to bring it thinking that it was included. So that's on me. But yeah, I'm glad that there are at least a bunch of y'all expecting an episode 4 recap. Sorry we couldn't get that to you, but we're going to recap episodes 4 and 5 for y'all today. Episode 4, The Great Wave, was obviously last week. And we have at least some Wikipedia info for you there. This is directed by Wayne Che Yip, written by Stephanie Folsom, J.D. Payne, and Patrick McKay. 71-minute runtime. Episode 4. Elise, what are your overall thoughts?
The standout moment for me was the opening of this episode, which was a mock fall of Numenor, which is, I think, one of the things that we are all waiting to see in its full gravitas this season. God, the money put into this show just allows them to do such incredible, incredible things. And that's just for me. I want those big set pieces and I want that spectacle. I'm still not really loving how the show is handling Galadriel in general. And so that's just kind of something that, like, I've hung my hat on it, and I'm having a bit of a tough time reconciling. I don't know about you.
Yeah, sure. I not necessarily how they're handling certain characters. I think maybe just the speed at which things are going for me. I think the as you heard in our episodes 1 and 2 recaps, I think the show started off insanely strong for me, at least. And I feel like it has dipped and kind of waned and taken a while for things to get going. I'm still enjoying my time with it, just not nearly as much as I was with episodes 1 and 3, where if episodes 1 and 2 started off the way they are now, I'm not sure I would have stuck with it. But I feel like with episodes 1 and 2, I've seen the potential of what this show can bring. So I'm just hoping to maybe reach those highs again. But also, I'm pretty interested and seeing with where they're taking the lore that they're working with right now, which seems to be certainly changed in a lot of different ways. I'm excited to see what these characters are and what some of their motivations end up being. See what's up with the stranger and all that stuff. We'll talk about that.
I would say a shortcoming of the show, in my opinion, is that I'm not equally invested in every subplot that's happening, in every storyline. And you watch Righteous Gemstones, right?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't? Oh, okay. There are other shows where they do have these different point of views. They have different characters that we follow, different plots, and each one is as interesting as the next. Yeah, I'm never ripped out of it. In this, I just find myself sometimes I'm so invested and then I immediately lose that enthusiasm.
That's me with The Boys. I think that's me and a lot of the people are kind of funny with The Boys, where the A plot and the B plot and the C and D and E and F and G and H, and like there was so many different strings there that were all equally interesting. And I just did not feel it that way. At least, you know what? I'm just realizing something right now. The green screen, that's on me. I could just turn that off. I just realized that right now because I had the green screen set.
I thought that was strange. I didn't want to say anything. It's not my production. You know, I'm not here to...
A lot of different things on my mind, kind of trying to run this show.
We're playing it fast and loose on this screencast this week.
As soon as I saw Discord and I saw that you just had your normal green shirt, I was like, huh, I think something's... And it's because of the green screen that we do for the Kind of Funny Football League.
I should have been wearing my new Nitro Rifle shirt. That's on me, man. That's on me.
Hey, you know what? Maybe one day soon you'll get that shirt in like a month and a half or whatever. Let's run through the plot real quick for episode 4. Jason Momoa kicks a seal door and his friends off the sea guard. He knows that the West is his destiny and his friends are pissed that they were fired too. But Isildur's like, my dad owns the building. He can get you all rehired. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm, kind of playing like that little bratty son. Like, dude, don't worry about it. I can get it all rehired. But they're all really mad at him because he kind of fucked up their future, right? Like they kind of had their whole plan, and kind of shitty that they all kind of got kicked off. I don't really understand the it's like we need conflict.
Yeah, when a teacher holds the whole class back because one bad actor sort of deal, that's what it really feels like, where they're all being penalized for this one guy's actions.
Yeah, kind of ridiculous. Adar is introduced, and guess what? It's Uncle Benjen. It's you, Uncle Benjen. He comforts a dying orc. It's kind of cute. It's a little scary too.
It was
a little endearing. Kind of endearing.
I would like to hear the orcs call him daddy.
Yeah.
But I'll take father.
Wow, you took it. Great minds think alike, at least. Great comedic minds. Because I said, Arondir is like, why do the orcs call you father? And Adar says, because I told him to stop calling me daddy. That's the next line that I wrote. So great minds right there. And then we get a bit more of a kind of breakdown between what Adar is doing a little bit. He's kind of like, you know, he's like, oh, you're from the river. I remember that place. Like I used to be one of you, right? I used to kind of like fuck with your people and stuff like that. And then he tells Arondir, I need y'all to send a message to some people for me, you know, go talk to them. So following scene, Bronwyn is cutting rations. So her son is like, I can go get food for us. Don't worry. We don't all have to share these 4 potatoes. And Rowan ends up leaving Theo because he's scared when they're back in the village. Again, they're trying to find food for their little getaway.
Can I just say, Andy, like when they go to get food, they're in Os Tirith. Which for my brain, it sounds too much like Os Gileath. That is, again, one of my fantasy hangups where I'm like, guys, everything doesn't have to stem from the same root word.
You ever play Elden Ring? Holy cow. Jesus Christ. It's Margit and Morgott and geez Louises.
Get gum.
Jesus. When he's out there, though, an orc ends up attacking him inside of that house. He gets attacked, and then he stabs himself in the forearm with the hilt, and the sword grows like flame and fire and stuff, and he defends himself, and you're like, oh shit, this is what this thing does. How he knew to do that, I'm not sure. I think it's maybe when he cut his finger and he saw it turn on fire. That's just good gamer sense right there, Elise. That's good, like, in the moment, knowing, like, I have the flag, I need to, like, you know, kill this one guy or whatever. And the orcs, that's their mission. They're like, hey, we have the hilt. I know where it is. The guy's around here. He has it. We have to find it. So they're calling it the hilt, which I think is the first time it's kind of named in a way, you know?
Yeah. Played too many RPGs.
Elrond and Celebrimbor talk about Elrond's dad and how the dwarves and elves, like, wow, it's really cool seeing elves and dwarves work together. Who would have thunk? And Andy, what's up?
My favorite thing happening in this show in this episode and onward is still just the relationship between the elves and the dwarves. And
same.
It's straddling that line of this tension that they have between these two races. And like, gosh, I would just watch, if the show is just this, that would be enough for me.
100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. I think not only does it bring a lot of interesting tension, but it brings neat moments of levity that I think the show doesn't have enough of. They think that Durin is hiding something. So, you know, here we have this sort of passive aggressive, not so secret interrogation where he's talking to Durin's wife and he's like, oh, what's Durin doing down there? Why is he going to take, why are you cooking food if he's going to be back a lot quicker, you know?
Yeah. And why would he need to bring food with him into the mines? It sounds like he's going pretty deep.
Yeah. He's like, he's not going to be back for 2.5 days, but you're cooking him food right now. And she's like, well, the most skilled dwarves takes him about a couple hours. And she's like, will there any other questions? Hey, you got anything else, brother? Like, I got an answer for everything. And I kind of really enjoyed the tension there because you could tell. I don't know. I just enjoy those moments in media. I like there's like a sort of like outsmarting of each other.
Oh, and Durin's wife is ride or die.
Oh,
you can get that from her immediately.
Absolutely. But these elf ears, they hear all, at least. And she hears them talking, Elrond hears them, Durin and the wife talking. I forget her name. I apologize.
Is it Nisa? Disa. It's Disa, Disa, right?
Disa, yes. D-I-S-A. It is Disa. He hears them talking. They're talking about the mine below the Miramir. And it seems like Elrond is kind of aware of this place. And yeah, it's pretty dope. So a secret little saying opens a secret little door. And here comes Elrond and he's searching. He finds Durin and the crew. And Durin's like, all right, I'm going to show you something, but you better not fucking tell anybody, bro. And he's like, what do you all call it? He's like, well, in your language, I think it's called Mithrad. And he's like, no, it is Mithril. And then the cave starts to cave, which is kind of interesting to think about, at least, because like a mountain can't mountain, but a cave can cave. Kind of interesting, right?
If a cave caves, does the rubble become a mountain?
Oh, wow. Like, because you could burrow into a burrow. You know what I mean? You can't mountain into a mountain. It's just really interesting how words are.
Did you sleep last night?
Not really. Not really.
Andy. Mithril. Oh. To a Lord of the Rings fan's ears, one of the sweetest terms in all the nomenclature of the franchise. Give it
so
to us.
Cool.
And two things you never want to remine: an old mine and an old relationship. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting both of them here. We're going into the old mine. We're seeing Elrond and Durin, their tension. I'm loving it. I'm here for it.
Loving it. It's also just really cool how, you know, Durin kind of gives some backstory. He's like, we found this shit. we want to keep on mining it, but daddy won't let me because it's too dangerous. And then, of course, the cave starts to cave. And I saw a couple write-ups kind of thinking that they heard a roar in the background, maybe the roar of a Balrog. Maybe that's what started the cave-in, start to cave-in. So it's possible. But either way, it's really cool just to get that, just to get the setup of what the Mithril is. And I'm not sure if it happens here or whether it's later on where the king of the elves is telling Elrond about, I think that is later, where he's like the Balrog and the person and the lightning struck. And that's the coolest fantasy shit of all time.
Yeah. It's so good. I love that. That anytime, like, you get that little aside and it's an animation or a stop motion or what have you, and you get a little bit of, like, I felt like Thor Ragnarok did that really great with the art on the ceiling, and then we get the Valkyrie. And I also, if you've ever seen his Dark Crystal Renaissance, Dark Crystal on Netflix, when the puppets
That, you were very disappointed in me that I haven't seen it. Yeah,
and the puppets do a puppet show, Andy, to tell the history of the world. Do a puppet show with little puppets, and it's so great.
I imagine that's the example you always conjure in moments like this when you're talking about TV shows. For us in the Kind of Funny crew, we always bring up in Harry Potter, one of the final ones, where they do that little animation moment to kind of tell you about the three whatever the fucks.
The Elder Wand and the...
Yeah, and the invincibility cloak and all
the
that
Deathly
shit.
Hallows.
Deathly Hallows. There we go. I'm really, really bad at remembering words, everybody. It's scary. They all kind of leave the cave. The next scene, Eärion is talking to the dude who looks like Matt Smith merged with Topher Grace. They flirt a bit, and I just don't care. I don't care about any of this.
It's
obviously there to stoke tension because he's the son of Farazin or whatever. She's the
We say it during Latin Heritage Month?
Well, if you were in Spain, you'd go Farazón with a little lisp. Oh. You do it with a little lisp for there. Farazón.
Yeah, how would Latino of the Rings say? Well, that's what we're going by.
Yeah, we're still kind of workshopping this whole concept. It might be done by Hispanic Heritage Month in 2026. They're flirting here. I just don't care. This is another one of these maybe side plots that you're mentioning that you don't care about, that I certainly don't really care much about either.
She was created for the show, correct? His sister?
Yes, I believe so. I don't really care a whole lot about what's happening here. And then we get a sequence with Halbrand and Galadriel in the jail. And he's kind of telling her, hey, something clearly bothered the queen enough to lock you up. And it's when you asked about her father. And he's like, I don't know, maybe you should, going about it all the wrong way as well. Like, I was super strategic. You waltzed in there, were like, gave me some ships, get me the fuck out of here. And like, that's not going to work with these people. You need to be a bit more diplomatic. You need to be a bit more friendly. And so he kind of convinces her, and eventually these guards come to take her out, and she beats all the guards' asses. And then we get a little glimpse of Halbrand talking to Farazin. And there were some people on the internet kind of speculating that he's whispering into the ear of Farazin, being like, I wouldn't fuck with her if I were you. And they're making sort of allusions that Sauron is kind of like always whispering and things like that. This is one of the running speculations that's been happening forever, that Halbrand is Sauron, because he's also good with the sword as well. But we are kind of getting to the point where I feel like in past Marvel MCU shows, we're like, oh, this character's got to be this character, and that speculation ends up going on, and you build this up in your mind, and then something else happens and it completely just knocks everything down. So maybe he's not Sauron. I'm not sure.
I love that we learned a bit of the political context here, that the king was sort of almost secretly deposed because he kind of wanted, he was saying, let's sort of repair our relationship with the elves.
Absolutely.
And maybe rebuild that alliance. And people were not happy about that.
Yeah.
And again, I think that one of the things, the messages that we get in Middle Earth is that all these races unified, working together, is always going to be the thing that triumphs against evil. And when, and we see when these races are divided and they're not collaborating, they're not working together, that's when these major downfalls of civilizations occur. And I, from a geopolitical perspective, love all that stuff.
Absolutely.
That's what I want the most of.
Absolutely. And in this, here's a little shot of the kind of like, hey man, what's going on?
You know,
here?
the guy with the what's his name? The
Halbrand?
The dad, Halbrand. No, the
Elendil or Farazin.
The guy on the right.
Yeah, yeah. Farazin.
Farazin. He always makes me think of Christopher Guest in Princess Bride.
Yeah,
like it's just something about the hair and the beard and his eyes. He just has this kind of like, you don't trust him look.
Got those really nice eyebrows that kind of like arch up.
Yeah.
Next sequence, we get Eärendil. She calls her brother Isil, and I think that's pretty cool. But I'm gonna call him Izzy. So Isildur will now be Izzy. Izzy wants to head west, but he feels he doesn't deserve this. And at this moment, when they're having this sort of back and forth, he also asks her, like, hey, what's up with this guy that you're kind of talking to, this dude, Hemin, I forget the name. The dude that I don't like that they have kind of a crush on. She's like, well, we had a dinner, you know, things were going good, and I just don't really care about much of this. And then you hear guards being like, she broke out! And so it's clear that Galadriel broke out and everybody's panicking. So she breaks into the tower, and she's like, King, excuse me for barging in, but he's on the bed and looking just deathly ill. He looks super sick. He's moments away from passing, it looks like. And so we get to talk to Tar Palantir, who is the inventor of the Palantir Searing Stones and the Scrub Daddy Sponge. and I assume he invented it, maybe not. He's named after it. I don't know what the connection is there, but it is clear in episode 2 we saw the Queen Regent using the Palantir, and she also introduces those later.
And what do you need to clean a Palantir but a Scrub Daddy?
Cool. So exactly.
I wonder which came first.
The fingerprints get so it's so fingerprint. It's a fingerprint magnet. Yeah. He wanted to make friends with the elves again. This is where we get this little explanation. But people were pissed off about it. Galadriel touches the one seeing stone, and the other 6 are missing. She sees Numenor being flooded over, just like we saw in the beginning of the episode. But she's also like, those things show, you know, those things kind of just show you a bunch of different random shit. Like, these Palantirs aren't always truthful. And Muriel's really... What's up?
I just feel like, to me, this is where we see, like, Galadriel sort of deviate from the Galadriel I know of the movies. Because, you know, I think of the Galadriel, like, and things that have to come to pass. And I'm like, I don't know, I feel like Galadriel the movies would be a little bit more, like,
tactful,
or she'd be a little bit more accepting of maybe this is prophetic.
Okay, I see that. I totally see that.
Yeah.
Muriel does not want to piss off the gods. She doesn't want to join Numenor with the elves and fight everybody, like, because she thinks that this is going to be their destiny if they try to do so. Next sequence, we have John Connor from Terminator 2. He returns to the he returns with the food, and he tells Theo's hot mom, Theo said he'd be right behind me, and he lied. He left because he was terrified. And then we see Theo struggling over there, and he's about to get murked after escaping a bunch of these sort of orcs. An orc catches him, but guess what? Hot elf is here to save the day. And Arondir saves Theo from death.
He's so cool.
And he catches a fucking arrow at least.
Yeah. Oh.
What a cool moment that was. That was a really, really cool moment. One time Jackie Chan's father caught a bullet with his bare hands. That's from the movie Rush Hour 1.
Oh, I see.
When they eventually escape the forest, though, they kind of get to a clearing, and the old sun is here to save the day because it's morning time, and the elves aren't happy about that, or the orcs aren't happy about that.
Andy, how do you feel about that? Because they are really treating in this show as if sun is like a pure poison to orcs, and like they cannot even stand in it without being eviscerated. And to me, I always felt like more in the movies, it was that they had a sensitivity to it. And I could see it being a sort of thing where, well, it used to be more potent to orcs, and now they've developed a tolerance to it over thousands of years. What's your kind of take? How do you feel about this mechanic?
It's definitely a very reminiscent of like any sort of vampire movie. But apparently this is closer to what the books were.
Oh, okay.
This is closer to what Tolkien had written. And they're using it here as a very, very strong plot device, because it's obvious that when we get to that later scene with Adar, I believe in episode 5, yeah, he wants to get rid of the sun somehow. Like, this guy's got aspirations.
He's Mr. Burns in part one of Who Shot Mr. Burns.
He wants to like nuke the sun, you know. Yeah. So yeah, they are. It's obviously used as a device because you can't take over these Southlands with the sun being so present. We have to find a way to kind of get rid of the sunlight so that our army could grow. But yeah, apparently it was a bit more of an important thing in the books. And here they are definitely leaning heavily into that storytelling device. The intense music that you heard that whole time as they're escaping these orcs, that was Princess Deesa singing. That shit was cool as hell. I thought it was just dramatic music to kind of pump up the tension in the moment as they escape from the orcs. But it's Princess Deesa, and she's singing because she's trying to beg the rocks to free any dwarves that still have breath in their lungs, which is so cool of a concept.
Cool.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that
sequence. The relationship the dwarves have to the rock.
Yeah, and the earth as a whole, you know, like, it's so cool.
Yeah.
And then we get Durin walking in. He's pissed off because he hates Daddy, and, you know, he's mad. And I really enjoyed this sort of moment between him and Elrond. And Elrond is like, if I could still hug and love my dad today, I would. And Elrond tells Durin that the Valar lifted his dad beyond the bounds of the world to forever carry the evening star across the sky. Which sounds like such a dead end job, honestly. Like, yeah. What are the benefits at least? What are the hours like, you know? Sounds awful.
I also think it's like, you know, in terms of somebody trying to one up you, you're like, you know, you're complaining to your friend. Yeah, my dad's always on my case. My dad won't get off my back.
You know? Yeah.
And then, oh yeah, well, you know, my dad's a star. And it's like, well, it's not a competition.
Yeah. My dad's been dragging a star across the sky for a millennia. Yeah. And it's like, all right, bro, come chill out.
You can have empathy for someone else while also, you know.
I didn't ask, you know.
Come on.
Just ask me about me, you know.
Yeah.
So then the following sequence, we get Durin the Fourth, son of Durin the Third, talks to Durin the Third, father of Durin the Fourth, and son of Durin Jr. And they suspect that Elrond and the elves are hiding something, Elise. Something's up with these elves. What are they hiding? I kind of enjoy that moment.
Celebrimbor!
I love the moment where Durin, Daddy Durin is like, what does your intuition tell you?
Yeah.
And Durin the Third's like, I think I should kind of be a little bit suspicious of their plottings. And he's like,
what's your gut telling you?
Good son. Good son.
Yeah. Durin, the acting that he does with just his eyes, his expressions, his questioning, I love it. It's so good.
100%. Arondir tells Bronwyn the British are coming. He's like, hey, man, I got a message for you. This dude, Adar, he's told me that you all need to leave or else he's going to just wipe out this whole place. We get a scene where Waldreg, the creepy old dude, knows Theo took the hilt, and he gets super creepy with him. And I'm wondering, Elise, do you have to have that haircut in order to bear the hilt? Like, why do they both have this weird haircut?
It's so funny that you honed in on that, because during that scene, I was also thinking, like, gosh, I mean, there must be some design to the costuming and hair and makeup on this show, because it is not for aesthetics. And
there's a reason they made the hair like this.
Yeah.
It's almost like the kid is looking into his future.
Like, it's like, give me the Gerard Depardieu. You sit down in the chair, like, light me up.
Yeah. Just fuck it up at the neck and then give me some bangs, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, essentially,
I want to look like a little Victorian girl. Go.
I want to look like the king from Shrek or whatever.
Yeah.
And in this moment, we get Waldreg telling him, like, you know, it, something's coming. We better watch out. You know, I know
those comets.
This isn't a weapon that you're holding. This is something else. You know, the comets from the sky, all that sort of thing. And then the next following sequence, we get the orc telling Adar, we found it. It's in the tower. The final sequence of the show. Galadriel sails off and the white leaves start falling. The Valar are pissed. So they end up bringing Galadriel back. And we don't get that reveal until kind of later on in the speech. But I thought this sequence was really well done and really well composed and kind of structured. Because when we start when we see the leaves start falling, I thought the audio we're hearing is the Queen Regent in a flashback. I thought it's one of those TV movie-like flashbacks where you kind of you hear the person being like, when the leaves fall, shit's fucked up. The Valar are not happy. But it's really a cut to present day where the queen is talking to the people and being like, the leaves are falling. The Valar aren't happy. I'm going to join Galadriel and we're both going to sail to Middle Earth. What kind of a queen regent would I be if I didn't also put myself in harm's way, you know?
Yeah.
This light the fucking beacon. This moment is hype as fuck. And a lot of it is carried by not only what's happening on screen, but the music at least.
Oh, bears in full force.
Yeah.
He McCrary'd this scene. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. This whole sequence is just popping off. I love the music. It's super exciting. And you start to finally feel like, okay, this episode took 58 minutes to finally like really excite me. aside from the Elrond and the Durin stuff. But I think this episode ends insanely strong. And a lot of it is because I'm a sucker for a crescendoing score. And I get really excited. I get goosebumps. And I'm just like super jazzed by the end of this episode. And that's episode 4, Rings of Power. And we'll talk about episode 5 of Rings of Power right after this break. Episode 5 of Rings of Power, called Partings. We don't have a whole lot of information on it, at least. We don't have a whole lot of information on Wikipedia, so I know that it was directed by Wayne Che Yip, the same person who directed the last episode, and it was written by Justin Doble. Episode 5. Let me bring up my notes. Stranger wonders am I the danger? Oh, am I the peril? Yeah.
Is what he says, which is an interesting like phrasing. Sorry, I got this itch in my back.
Scratch that itch. This episode has, I think, my favorite line delivery of any of these episodes. And it's just a really tiny, super quick moment between Nori and the stranger when they're having this sort of back and forth about what the plan is. We're heading to the grove. We want to go to a place where there's a bunch of like fruit and apples and all this orchards and all this sort of stuff. She tells him about, we make for Norfield Glen to snail while the snailing's good. And this is a moment where we're seeing the stranger learn more and more about how to speak and how to communicate. And he looks at her and he's like, snails? And she's like, snails, yeah. And her reaction in that moment, I think, is just like so adorable and wholesome and heartfelt. And it's just such a quick little thing. It lasts about half a second, but I'm like, man, that is the most like realistic reaction and acting I've ever seen in the show. And it's just, I just want to shout her out because I think she's lovely. Markella Cavanaugh.
She's doing such a wonderful job.
Yeah.
I will say the Harfoot consistently one of the stories that I enjoy going back to.
Exactly. And I think that may be polarizing amongst people that are enjoying the show, because I know some people who are enjoying it that are like, oh, the Harfoots, I don't really care to go back over there. But I'm really enjoying everything that's happening with the Harfoots, and I'm excited to learn more about the stranger's backstory.
Yeah, I think I've also built this expectation for myself that the Harfoots are the precursor to the Hobbits, and the grove that they are referring to is going to become what we know as Hobbiton.
Right.
And so I'm mentally for myself seeding that trail where I'm like, oh, we're gonna get that big payoff.
Yeah.
Here. I they might just, that might just be a red herring that they're setting up for us. And then the Harfoots all are horrifically and brutally murdered.
Well, but yeah, we'll hope to see if like any of them re-sign for season two.
Yeah.
And yeah, at the end of this conversation, the stranger's like, am I the peril? And she's like, no, you're good, you're good. And it's just really, it's a cute scene. And then the following sequence, we get the whole Harfoot family along with Poppy and her crew. And Poppy, they're like, sing us a song. And oh, yeah. It's far away. Yeah. That's a little brain worm right there, Elise.
It was good. And we get the whole, you know, not all who wander are lost. Which,
yeah.
Of course, for a Lord of the Rings fan is very, carries a lot of gravity and weight. And I will say, as we were watching this scene and they're pulling their little trailers, James was shouting at the scene, James, my husband, because the stranger's pushing the wagon and he's like, why isn't he pulling it? He should be pulling it. You know, James, the man of brawn,
sure,
said, why isn't he up there in the front pulling? He was really bothered by that. And I was like, bro, chill out. It's fiction.
The following sequence, we get these three mysterious people in white robes overlooking where the stranger fell. And I'm sure they're super good, wholesome characters.
This is the trailer moment we've all been waiting for.
This is the moment where we see, I believe some people already found out the names of them, and they sound like like people in Destiny 2. Like
Kevin. Oh.
definitely not that. Yeah. Kevin and George. yeah, no, they have like three kind of nicknames, like the Ascendant and the something. That's not exactly what it is, but it's something like that.
Yep.
Actually, if you don't mind Googling that for me right now.
Yeah, let me see if I can. Or maybe it's in this rundown I have up here, hopefully.
Because in the episode, they don't tell you who they are. Like the Amazon X-ray does not reveal. They only tell you who the actors are. But they're overlooking where the stranger fell. And they're holding up. One of them has up this sort of device with the same constellation that the stranger is seeking out.
Okay.
Let's see. Apparently they're followers of Sauron, maybe? Like a cult?
The cult of Melkor?
Yeah, it's possible.
That's what I'm seeing?
Yeah. That's what a lot of people are assuming.
Yeah, Morgoth worshipping group established by Sauron.
Yeah. But they're looking for the stranger, and we don't really know why. It's kind of... they just look super evil, though. Like, they doesn't look like any... There's no good vibes. There's no joking around here.
Yeah, one of them is carrying a staff that's design resembles the Eye of Sauron.
Gotcha.
Kind of in shape.
But yeah, I really, this shot right here, I think, is pretty neat. Seeing this little device that this person's holding with the constellation that the stranger was looking at.
Yeah, it also makes, I mean, that aerial shot as well. And I feel like there's so many connections with that. The stranger's landing spot between, like, you know, how it resembles the Eye of Sauron and it's tough. Who is Sauron?
I mean, I think that a lot of these are just red herrings. I think
I think so too.
I think they just want you to think the stranger is Sauron. Following sequence, Waldrick starts a mutiny and a bunch of people leave that little that little civilization. Oh, we also get the sequence where Adar is talking to the orc and he's like, hold out your arm, does it hurt?
Like,
yeah, it fucking hurts, bro. This shit does not feel good, man. And he's like, well, we got to block out the sun then. You know, that's kind of where this whole plan starts off. And yeah, Uncle Benjen just looking like just looking rough out here, you know.
Oh yeah, get a color correcting cream or something there. Yeah. I love the orcs in this show. Anytime the orcs come on, especially when they're having some kind of dialogue or an actual like intelligent discourse about something. I do really like the way they're being handled. Peter Jackson's orcs were always more like a, wow, what do we have here?
Yeah.
Can't we have some meat?
Yeah. That's always that shit. But yeah, this sequence, you could tell that Adar rarely sees the sun either because he's always just kind of hanging out with these orcs. So he is obviously super pale and he's looking at the sun.
He's a gamer.
He's like, yeah, he's a gamer. He's like, we're going to block out this sun soon. Because he's been indoors all weekend with that double XP weekend.
Yeah, a glare on my monitor.
Yeah. and then, yeah, the following scene, we get Isildur. No, that isn't what happens. It looks like I skipped a scene. Well, this is where Bronwyn tells her whole crew. This is the whole mutiny sequence. Bronwyn's like,
oh, yeah,
we're not leaving this place. You know, who's going to fight with us? And Waldrig's like, y'all are fucking crazy. I'm not sticking around in here. But also, I think a lot of that is just the weakness of man and how he's been corrupted and he's quickly going to follow whatever dark power because he's been stabbing his forearm a little too much, you know, with that hilt back in the day. So the mutiny begins. A lot of people leave. Young John Connor is looking at Theo and he's like, come on, let's go, Theo. And Theo's just like, nah, man, I'm not leaving. Waldrick really wants Theo to go with him as well. Really creepy. And then we see, we get this sequence at least, which made me giggle a bit. Let me freeze frame this right here for video watchers, audio listeners. This is a sequence where we're back in Numenor and there's a horse being transported. There's just a horse being moved to a boat to kind of like, which I think is kind of neat because a lot of our questions would have been, how the fuck they get the horses to Numenor? Yeah. And this is how. Pretty neat sort of visual explanation right there. And in this sequence, at least, we get... oh my goodness, I've totally forgot that in the last episode... right here, this is where Izzy asks his dad, Elendil, to let him join this army. I want to go fight with you all. And Elendil's like, you fucked up, son. You got kicked off of the Sea Guard. You know, I'm not just going to give you this job because I'm your father. Following sequence, we get Eärendil talking to that dude, the son of Faerzan.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, talk to your dad about this. Because guess what, Elise? Right now, we ended that last episode, which what seemed like a lot of people in Numenor being like, fuck yeah, Queen Regent, we're with you. Let's go to Numenor. And apparently that didn't last very long because in this sequence, a lot of people are like, fuck that, Queen. We don't want to go to Numenor. Why are you risking our lives? And I wonder, like, this is probably just a different subsect of people, but it just seems like kind of just a lot of mixed messaging from the show, where in the last episode we ended with everybody super stoked and I want to fight for the cause. I'm with you, blah, blah, blah. And then now everybody is like, fuck that. You're sending our people to die. You're going to join the elves. Like, why are you taking us out? You know, it's just kind of it's weird.
Yeah. And it feels like it's the growing pains of we can't crescendo this plot too much because we have to sustain it for an entire show.
Yeah.
So we have to go one step forward and two steps back. And, you know, all the stuff that's happening with, like, Faerzan, and he's like, I want to help restore the Southlands and bring Halbrand back there. And I think it's like, he's clearly, like, a dude that's not he's not a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, like, we're going to get a moment at some point where of course, like, they think that they're going to be waging this war, and then he's going to pull the bottom out of it or whatever.
Yeah.
Backdoor something or betray somebody, and like that whole side of things, like
this is like trust. The Game of Thrones, like, side of things.
Yeah.
This is the political kind of
machinations and stuff. Yeah,
absolutely. Next we get Muriel and Faerzan talking to Halbrand, and they get Halbrand out of where he was blacksmithing, and he's kind of giving them info as to, like, this is where the enemy was moving last time I was in the Southlands. And Galadriel is telling the Queen Regent Muriel, Halbrand's here to take back his land. And he's super stoked about this, even though he's not really acting like it right now. this is all him. And they both feel like they're both being used, because Galadriel's like, dude, I just talked to her. I'm going to get you all these fucking ships. I'm going to do all this for you. And he's like, are you sure it's just for me? Because you have revenge on your mind and that's it, mm-hmm. you know? And I kind of enjoyed this back and forth. This is where we, it really seems like the actress Morfydd Clark, who plays Galadriel, she is really, she summons a lot of Cate Blanchett in those moments where she is looking intense without having her eyes open and freaky. Like, she does this sort of death stare into the camera that I think just kind of really shows off her intensity. And I enjoy those moments with her.
Yeah. She never stopped fighting, and she can't.
Yeah. We get to that conversation later, which I think is even better and kind of furthers where you get her motivations. Following sequence, we get the Harfoots, and they're worried about the, one of them was worried about the stranger. I forget her name. Malva. She's talking to Sadduk, the leader of the Harfoots, and she's like, this forest is all fucked up, man. Like, it's clear that the stranger has, this guy has something to do with this. And then a bunch of wolves attack him. And then the stranger, he upgraded his skill tree. He has a ground pound attack now for 700 plus damage. And he fucked up these wolves. Oh, and it was God. Cool as hell, Elise.
It was cool as hell. And I mean, I guess it's lending even more and more credence. Could he be Sauron? Like, this, you know, the cult of Sauron is looking for him, and probably because they want to remind him, like, hey, dude, you are Sauron. I don't know. It's just like, I think they're trying to really set him up as he might be the savior of these people. But then
I think he's going to end up being a good wizard, whether it's one of these blue wizards or whether it actually is Gandalf. At first, I thought maybe even Radagast because of this forest and
he's the connection to nature.
He's with the Harfoots, who are so in tune with nature.
Yeah.
Either way, like, this is where, again, taking a long time to develop, and that's one thing I don't love about a lot of this show.
They're baking the bread, and maybe it's gonna get a little overcooked.
It is, you know? It is like, you know, you put that brisket in the fucking crock pot at 2 a.m. so it could be ready by noon. Yeah,
you want the meat to be moist by the time you're eating it.
It's taken a while. And that's definitely one thing I'm not loving about the show. I don't think it's moving fast enough. But there's the part of me that's still enjoys the lore so much that I'm just kind of really digging and figuring out what this mystery is. The next scene, Galadriel teaches all these dudes how to fight. And I think it's kind of cool. She ends up busting out double swords at one point, and she's like fighting six people. And she finally gets cut by Valandil.
And he's like so proud and like, what? When it's like, dude, she just fought off eight of you.
And you, like, barely cut threads on her shirt.
And you're walking so proud with your chest out. But, you know, step in.
Set the fuck back, right? He gets promoted to lieutenant, not lieutenant. He gets promoted to lieutenant, which is
how the British say it.
I forgot that was a thing that happened. Yeah. And then up next we get, we also see Halbrand kind of move his sword and
he has a cool little move.
Yeah, and this is another thing that, like, again, baking the bread too long, at least, like, we know there's something up with Halbrand.
Yeah, it's like, we get it.
We've been shown that there's something up with Halbrand. You don't need to keep driving the point home with Galadriel being like, huh, it's kind of interesting to see just a regular blacksmith have moves like that. It's like,
also it feeds into my criticism of Galadriel, which is like, she should feel less naive.
Yeah.
And they're treating her like, I don't like that.
I mean, it's obviously her being like, I know something's up with you, brother. But, like, we've known this for several episodes. And what hurts it even more, Elise, is that we might go an episode without even seeing these characters. Like, we had, because there's so much material here, they will go a full episode without showing you one of the C or B plots.
Yeah.
And so it does feel like an even longer lifetime ago that we knew something was up with Halbrand. And so it just feels like it's taken a long time to develop there. The next sequence, we have Kemen talking to his dad, Farathon, and he's trying to convince him to, like, hey, go against the queen. Don't send all these people to war. And it's really because he's horny for Eadion, you know, because Eadion was like, hey, if he won't listen to you, get louder. Like, be more, you know, do something about this. Because Eadian doesn't want them to go to Numenor. And then we have this sequence where the Queen Regent is talking to her father. And this sequence, I'm kind of blanking on a lot of what happens exactly. He's essentially telling her, don't go to Middle Earth. He's talking to the Queen Regent being like, don't go to Middle Earth.
Like, yeah.
Which is weird because you would think he'd want to help because he always wanted to help back in the day, you know? And yeah. That's why I'm kind of blanking on.
I'm blanking too, and I'm sorry. Oh, let me see if I can find it here, guys.
Yeah, I'm like also trying to bring up just episode 5 recap, and yeah, this sequence, I think just kind of lost me. You know, she says, she's like, we're restoring the connection with the elves. I'm going to Middle Earth, and he's like, don't do this. Like, there's
gonna. Yeah, it sounds like he just has very vague, prophetic statements about, like, you know, evil will come of this.
Yeah, all that awaits you is darkness.
Yeah.
Which, again, kind of weird. I always thought he would have been on the other side of things a bit more. You know, I thought he'd have more confidence in her. Anyway, next scene is where we get the stranger, and he's like healing his arms because he did that magic and that shit hurt. Like, he was me going to the gym and doing the Stairmaster, and my legs are my dogs are barking the next morning. But he does this like ice power stuff as he's healing himself, and Nori gets all freaked out, and then she gets ice blasted away.
He's a new skill tree upgrade.
Yeah. He's like, he's kind of like in a meditative state, you know?
Yeah, he's mumbling some kind of incantation or mantra or something, and he's completely out of it.
Yeah, so she gets blasted back, and it's reminiscent of the Fireflies moment where he gets in those trance-like states and then kind of affects the world around him. And I absolutely love this shot. He's kind of looking at his hands, freaking out, and the trees behind him are moving.
Yeah,
like not because of like Ents or anything like that, like, but the whole world is kind of just affected by him in a really neat way. I really kind of love the shot of the trees kind of swaying because he's just seems to be imbued with some sort of power.
I don't want to sidetrack us, but rewind for a second.
Yeah.
You know, when during the lieutenant promotion, the whole idea of, like, you know, Farazan would rather die than take orders from an elf.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a lot more of this, like, oh, you know, Farazan, he wants to elves to take orders from men, and this is his like big position,
right?
Which, like,
he's like, I don't mind working with y'all, but like, you're gonna work under us.
Yeah, and his whole thing is like, yeah, I want to restore power to the Southlands, and I want to reinstall a king there, but it's because I want them to be in debt to us and here in Numenor. Like, I want Numenor to be like this trade and political power, and have this subjugation to the rest of Middle, or have Middle Earth be subjugated to us.
Again, so, a lot of the I know some Lord of the Rings viewers or readers will be like, Andy, it's not inspired by Game of Thrones. It's, you know, yeah. Game of Thrones is inspired by Lord of the Rings. But like, this is the part of the Game of Thrones vibe that gives me a lot of those political sort of, like, we're talking about like episode one Phantom Menace Trade Federation type shit.
Yeah, it's using the same like story devices and geopolitical storytelling to tell this narrative, and absolutely.
Which I think is a very smart call, a smart play from him, you know, being like, look, we're doing this because they have a lot of resources for us. They have a lot of things that could help us out if we eventually go over there and Halbrand, you know, we reclaim the land for Halbrand.
But it's like, we're effectively installing a puppet king that will bow to us.
Yeah.
And profit us, yeah.
Following sequence, we have this little dinner where the elves and
love it.
Yeah, love this. They're back in Linden, and This is where
the atmosphere. They're at a table in the forest, the candlelight around.
This is where King Durin was like, go over there, figure some shit out, son. Figure some shit out.
Durin the third, father of Durin the fourth.
Yeah, and we have this little setup where he talks about the table that they're sitting at and how the wood is like super important to his kind. And that was all just bullshit to lead up to a really neat comedic moment later on.
I loved that. I love this whole scene so much because, you know, they have this stone table or what have you. And Durin says, where did you get this from? Because in our culture, this is only reserved for tombs and bear. Like he's shaming them so hard by saying you took something that was so sacred and how we honor the death of our people and you're eating off of it.
Yeah, he's like, sorry for the sacrilege. You know, my bad.
Yeah. And I love Durin's my favorite. And even that whole exchange where Durin's asking them why it's taking so long. And he's like, you know, it takes you people weeks to decide to take a shit. And he gets like,
it's cut off.
It's so good. But like, gosh, the this whole dinner was like my
favorite. It's great. It's great. And it continues to be, I think, the highlight of the show of the elves and the dwarves and their back and forth and their tensions. It led to some of the better moments in the Lord of the Rings movies. And I think it's still going really great here. And yeah, we have Durin being like, it's good to know there's still honor among elves. And like, your loyalty to the dwarf is admirable. He's like, well, I'm loyal to a friend, you know. Yeah. And this is where we kind of get, this is kind of where we get the whole thing. Like, you know, hey, I had you go over there to kind of look for something.
Yeah. And good guy Elrond. And I think this is also seeding, you know, the fact that Elrond in Lord of the Rings is like, yeah, let's make a fellowship of men and dwarves and elves. And when, you know, at Helm's Deep, let's send an army of elves to fight alongside men. Like, he doesn't have those partitions that he puts up.
Absolutely.
Because he has these thousand year friendships.
Yeah, I'm loyal to a friend regardless of race. And this is where he basically finds out that the king was like, I sent you over there to look for something. And he's like, recount that story to me, Elrond. And then
Elrond's like, I think you're kind of being shady.
Yeah. And this is where they talk about that really dope ass story where the Balrog is fighting one of the Valar or the Maiar. I'm forgetting.
Yeah. The Valar?
But yeah. The Eldar. On one side fought an elven warrior with his with a heart as pure as the Manwë, who poured all of his light into the tree to protect it. And a Balrog of Morgoth. And then a lightning fucking strikes. And the tree, the roots go all the way down to the rocks. And it creates this vein of Mithril. And it's pure as light. And it's just like, makes me want to replay Elden Ring. it's just so cool. I just live for this fucking fantasy stuff.
And now we see like the tree is being corrupted by some kind of darkness. And the light of it is fading. And only the Mithril will revive it.
Yeah.
Or so Celebrimbor says, which like to me is also fascinating because like we know that at least Galadriel's ring was forged using Mithril. I don't know about the other rings, but I think hers is one for sure. Like that's how Mithril plays a part into the ring story. So they might just be expanding it and saying like all the rings were made using this material. And yeah. The elves egg on the dwarves to get it and give it to them. And of course, tragedy follows.
Yeah. And this is where we get this sort of tension of like, what are they doing down there, Elrond? And he's like, I swore an oath. I wasn't going to tell anybody. Swore an oath of friendship. That shit means something to me. He's like, well, what if it means that your people may be doomed?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like the tension right now brewing within Elrond.
I was watching that exchange between Elrond and King Gil-galad. And like he's like King Gil-galad's like, are they mining for Mithril? And Mithril and Elrond's like, I can't say. And it's like, well, the fact that you can't say is telling me that they probably are. It's kind of what I would have inferred.
Exactly.
From that.
Like, oh, for sure. Like, yeah. He's like, what? I don't know, bro.
Yeah. It's like, well, but that may, But it sounds like if they like, weren't, you would just well, be like, no.
Wink at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that you can't tell me the one thing probably means that that is happening.
Yeah.
And the next sequence, we have Isildur kind of becoming friends with his lieutenant, Velandil, again. And he's like, put me back on the crew, man. He's like, I'll let you punch me. He's like, give me three punches. He's like, all right, I'll give you two. And he punches him twice. And he's like, I felt like three. I like this a lot. It made me laugh. It's feeling more and more rare for me to get laughs out of non-dwarf and elf stuff. Mm-hmm. And when I say elf, I mainly mean Elrond and that crew. Like, Galadriel is definitely not bringing the comedy in any way. But I liked the sequence. I don't know about you.
I liked it too. And I'm warming up more to the men in this show. The men is my least favorite race.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah.
But
well, especially because in the sex sequence, we have Kevin, who, in that last sequence, we get Valandil telling Isildur. Mm-hmm. He tells Izzy, look, man, I would love to put you back on the crew, you know, but I only have so much power and blah, blah, blah. So Izzy just stows away on the boat because he's so mm-hmm. desperate to go to Numenor. And this is where he happens upon Kemen, who is there to burn the ship down. This, you have a good reason to not like the men because they are corrupted and fucked up.
Kind of funny, Kemen. He's trying to.
Kind of funny, Kemen. Yeah, that's the mixture between Matt Smith and Topher Grace. The ship explodes and.
Interesting that
not only Izzy saves Kind of Funny Kevin, but Izzy doesn't rat him out, which I thought was interesting. I thought he'd be like, bro, it wasn't me, it was this motherfucker.
I thought he was doing it because he was like, oh, if I cover for him, then they'll let me go, they'll like restore me and do all that. But
yeah. Sorry, I was just answering a Slack real quick. Next sequence, we get the Galadriel talking to the Queen Regent, being like, dude, we still have three ships. Don't pay attention to that. That's a distraction. Sure, we lost a boat, but it's clearly people trying to scare you into not going, you know. And you have, you still have your father's blessing, but it doesn't really seem like she has her father's blessing. The next sequence we get a sequence between Celebrimbor and Elrond, and they kind of chat. And this is where I'm kind of again blanking on certain things that were happening. I think he's talking to him about his father, possibly.
Oh yeah, is this about the Mithril? They're talking about the Mithril and how like this is what can bring the tree back.
Oh, it's all, yeah. This is where he admits to Elrond that he knew the whole time.
Yeah,
that Celebrimbor was like, I knew why they sent you down there. I fucked up, bro. My bad. Like, yeah. I should have told you. We know that there's Mithril down there. We know that they're hiding some shit. And then he tells him about his father and tries to just kind of tug at his heartstrings.
He's going to keep going on. My father's a star and everyone's going to, it's going to come up every episode to someone named my father. It's like, come on, bro.
It's funny you mentioned that, Celebrimbor, because like my mom, she's a like, all right, enough about your family, dude.
Yeah.
Next sequence, we get Galadriel apologizing to Halbrand, being like, I'm sorry I used you. Let's go do this together. Like we can do this together. And I think we get more backstory from Halbrand being like, you don't know the type of fucked up stuff I've done. Like, the stuff that I did before we met on the raft, it seems like he's probably killed a lot of people to survive in certain areas. And she says, sometimes to find the light, we must first touch the darkness.
Yeah.
This is where that whole motivation speech comes out, at least. This is where she's like, this is all based on kind of revenge. You know, I can't let this go. I know I'm fucked up. I know what I'm doing broken. Isn't the best thing, but like,
I
love where she talks about, like, my best friend was going to fucking sell me out to get me out of here because he knows how I can't really save myself. And this, by the way, Elise, if you want to look at the picture in picture, this is that intensity. Cate Blanchett
that's
look.
That's the Cate Blanchett. Yeah,
this
you're
is
right.
The Cate Blanchett, like,
You're absolutely right.
I'm not raising my eyebrows, but I'm like seeing through your fucking soul, you know?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I really enjoy this sequence. Me too. This is a good back and forth.
Because this is what I want. I want the Galadriel that knows what the fuck is up, knows what to do.
Yeah.
And is not taking any other questions. She's like, this is how it's gonna be. Like, that's what I want, is that.
Yeah, she mentions my best friend conspired with the king to exile me because they did not think that I could extinguish myself from the evil I was fighting or distinguish myself from the evil I was fighting, which is fucking awesome. Like,
she's been right.
Yeah. They kind of seem to come to an understanding there. And the next sequence we get Waldreg being like, are you Sauron? And Adar is like, bitch, no, I'm not Sauron. And he like choke slams him. And then what does he do? He takes John Connor for Terminator 2. And he's like, Waldreg, you want to be part of this? You got to fucking work for it. And yeah. It seems like they kill off John Connor, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah. And that kid's begging for his life. And Waldreg, yeah. We know Waldreg is an unscrupulous man.
Oh, sure.
So,
But what
and Waldreg says, I'll serve you then, whoever you are. Like, this guy does not care.
Oh, for sure. And if you stuck around to watch the next time on Rings of Power, if you stuck around for that, there's a sequence where we see Adar and an army kind of marching, and Waldreg's there. So Waldreg probably did some shit, you know?
Yeah.
One sec, answering another Slack. Yes.
Oh, no problem. Well, and then we go back to the tower. While you're slacking, I got you.
Yeah, thank you.
We're back in the tower where Theo is there, and he's showing off his hilt to Arondir, who recognize it. And then he, like, there's a secret thing in the stone wall that he reveals that there's, like, another thing resembling it.
That sword looks familiar.
Yeah, and it's actually a key. And it's connected to Adar's designs. He wants to become more of a deity to people.
That sword that it resembles is also like stabbing the statue of somebody that we don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Adar.
And Bronwyn says, we're destined for the darkness. It's how we survive.
Yeah. And I like that sequence with Bronwyn telling him like, look, we're this is fucked. This is kind of what we deserve. We are corruptible. We are humans, and no matter how hard we fight, we're probably going to get corrupted and fall for evil. Which I think is a really neat kind of like, reconciling with who you are. It's sad, and they're going to teach her that doesn't always have to be the case. But I still appreciate this moment from Bronwyn feeling really vulnerable. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, you know, and I'd feel vulnerable being around this hunk of a man, Arondir, you know what I mean?
Do we think that any of, like, because I saw this one theory that Hallbrand could become one of the Ringwraith. Like, because, you know, we have the fallen
kings of men. I heard about this, too.
I find that super fascinating about, like, are there men on this show that are going to, you know, become those Wraiths?
Yeah, so like the main cool. The main king, I want to say Night King, but that's Game of Thrones.
The Nazgul.
I really enjoy that. Following sequence is one of my favorites, but also least favorite in terms of CG because these fake trees look awful in the background. This is the sequence where they are moving the big stone table.
Yeah.
And it's clear that he was just fucking with them the whole time. Prince Durin was lying about the stone table being important to them. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Give me more of this. Like, it's just so fucking funny. We also another sequence I passed by was his wife, Disa, being like, tell me again, how did you and Elrond meet?
Yeah.
And they have completely different stories, and he lied the whole time about it, and he's like, well, actually, I fought off three Fucking,
I saved his life.
Yeah, I fought off three stone. No, what are they?
Golems. Yeah,
I fought off three golems. I busted out my bow, and he's like, "No, you bust out your sword." And he's like, "Well, yeah, regardless." Like, I just love how they fight. Like, it's my favorite part. You know,
it's such an odd couple, and it works. It's works so well.
100%. And then this is where Elrond's like, "I got some shit to tell you. I gotta come clean." And he goes, "Enough with the quail sauce. Give me the meat and give it to me raw." Like, just come clean. And I love that line. And he's like, "I went to you looking for something without knowing I was looking for something." Like, they know you have this mithril. They know about it. I didn't know that's why I was sent there. And the mithril is going to be the key to keeping us alive. And this leads to another amazing comedic moment with Durin being like, "So I got the fate of the elves in my hands." And he's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Say it again." It's just, "Who's got the fate of the elves in my hands?" Yeah. Like, I love it. It's hilarious. It's great.
Ah.
Those moments are great. And then we have another really hype moment, ending the episode with Halbrand kind of being like, "You know what? Fuck it. I'm in, dude. Let's do this shit.
You know what? Yeah, I'll take a shower."
Yeah. And this sequence kind of confused me because it kind of made it seem like this was somebody else picking up and grabbing the thing. It ended up just being Halbrand, I guess. But I guess he was coming back for it. But it kind of made it seem like somebody snuck in there and stole it off the table. But yeah, this sequence, everybody's really stoked, and they're getting all armored up. Everybody's looking hot. Galadriel looking super powerful in that dope-ass armor. Eadrin's not stoked that her brother's going off to war. Izzy is gonna... He's kind of given, like, the shitty job of... Isildur's just kind of like... His dad's like, "Nah, man, you're working in the fucking washroom or whatever, you know?
Clean the horse poop."
But... another sequence that is hype as hell, and because I'm such a prisoner of the moment, and I'm such a "what have you done for me lately," no matter how slow the rest of the show was and how slow the show has been the last couple of episodes, it gets really exciting near the end, and they play awesome music, and I go, "Wow, how cool!" But, like, it's taking a long time to develop. This meat is cooking, Elise. This meat is cooking a little too long.
I just feel like it's going to be a little bit too crisp. That meat's going to get thin and dry.
Yeah.
By the end of it. But maybe they're just like, "Hey, just hang tight. Hang tight. We want to establish this. We want to build the hype, tease it, and then it's going to be a big, big, big payoff." They have the money to do it. So that's the thing I keep reminding myself, is this show has so much money to be amazing. So
I hope it kind of pays off. Again, I think the show started off insanely strong for me. Last episodes have kind of waned, but, like, I would have loved for maybe the last three episodes to be condensed into maybe one or two really, really, really action-packed episodes. Not action, like, I'm not saying I need all action fight scenes all the time. Like, I mean, just, like, give me the meat and give it to me raw. Like,
agreed. Yeah, yeah.
Give me, like, the most important parts. Make the unimportant, uninteresting parts a little quicker and snappier.
Combine some conversations and moments.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, some pacing issues the show is suffering from, I think. But we're halfway through the show. And this has been Rings of Power episodes 4 and 5. Holy shit, we went long today. Sorry about that, Elise. Sorry, taking you from your real job.
I enjoyed it. I had a great time. I know we had two to get through. And hopefully people thought we did an okay job.
Yeah, and next week we'll be back with Tamor Hussein and Lucy James from GameSpot.
LJ Tam Jam.
Whew, from GameSpot and Giant Bomb. I'm excited to have them on the show next week. Because I think Tam's enjoying it, and I think Lucy might be kind of where we are. Let's get the ball rolling a little bit, you know. But we're finally setting sail. I feel like we could have set sail an episode ago. But we're finally sailing off to Middle Earth. And we'll see what happens then, Elise. Where can people find you?
You can find me every day on Funhouse. YouTube.com/Funhouse and Rooster Teeth. The whole gang over there making great comedy.
and Elise Willems on social media.
One day
she'll respond to me on TikTok because I always send her videos.
I have the worst. A lot of people send me TikToks, and then I'm just like, play it cool, Elise. Just don't respond to any of them. Don't watch them.
Everybody, we'll see you next week for episode 6 recap. Goodbye, everybody.